Now, more Drive Time Sports on KOAL, 107.3 FM and 7.50 AM, the play-by-play home of the Emory Spartans.
Going to talk NBA basketball as the in-season tournament will continue tonight. Two games tonight, two games tomorrow. It's kind of a Monday-Tuesday, split them up. East tonight, West tomorrow. We are down to the final four teams. And then we'll have the semifinals later on this week. Joining us right now to talk NBA basketball, as he does every Monday, we have James Holas, kind enough to join us over the phone right now. James, great to get you on.
I'm excited to talk some basketball. Let's go.
Yeah, let's absolutely do it. I want to start by talking about the Golden State Warriors. Two catastrophic losses. They fall to Sacramento after giving up a 24-point lead, and they do the same thing with the Clippers. I know you and I have had this conversation before. Large leads are just not safe in the NBA anymore with the style and the way the game is played today, maybe compared to 15, 20 years ago. But still, when you do that twice in about a span of, what, 6-7 days, you got problems.
Yes, and that's, I think we've seen enough on the Warriors the last couple of years. This wasn't a Jordan Poole problem. It's not a Steph Curry problem. Steph is awesome. It's the roster construction. I don't think they did a great job. And it really starts, I think, with James Wiseman. That was a pivotal moment in their franchise where they could have kind of replenished the coffers a little bit with a high-level talent, and they didn't get the guy. They didn't get the guy. They got basically nothing. They got Gary Payton the second again when they traded. They let Gary go and then trade back for him. So, yeah, man, Klay is not the same. Draymond has lost half a step. Wiggins has reverted back to his kind of career self, which, you know, I think that 1 year was more of a blip than the new standard for Wiggins. Steph is amazing, but there's just not enough guys you can play make around him. And so, yeah, it's one thing if you lose a lead, but, you know, you got to start winning those. And I think I did the math, and they've lost, like, they've had four or five bad losses where they were up 16, 18, and 20-something points where they frittered it away in the second half. They just don't have enough around Steph right now.
And I like the way you pointed out Jordan Poole, right? Because it seemed like, and I think this is per the norm, I think in any sport, when you have a dynasty and you start to see things drift a little bit, there's always got to be a scapegoat in some regard. It's not going to be the maestro. It's not going to be Steph Curry. And we know it's not Steph, right? It's not going to be the head coach. It's not going to be the front office. Typically, when you have something go weary, it's going to be a new addition. And I think that was Jordan Poole. You could have easily placed the blame on Draymond. You could easily place the blame on Klay Thompson not being healthy in the amount of time that he's missed. And Klay is a shell of his former self. But it was Jordan Poole. He was the fall guy.
He was. And it's, you know what? It's you can see the fan base starting to slowly wake up. The murmurs are becoming louder about Steve Kerr and his pronounced dedication to the vet core, right? Core. Those three guys did a lot of great things. But now, again, maybe a little bit he leaned on them a little too hard. And, yeah, they let Draymond get away with way too much. I mean, he sucker punched a teammate, and then the teammate gets traded a year later. Everybody blames the teammate, you know? He got himself suspended for 5 games for doing something ridiculous. He gets himself ejected from games. So it's too late to put the monster back in the cage with Draymond. Klay's ego was tremendous. They refused to talk about benching Klay. So I think we're, you know, a lot of people, including myself, have been praying on Golden State's downfall for a while, and I think we're starting to see it.
Again, James Holas, our guest right now as we talk NBA basketball. James, we are on the eve of the quarterfinals of the play-in, the in-season tournament. I keep calling it the play-in round, the in-season tournament. Tomorrow, we get the quarterfinals, and for those who have not paid attention, single elimination, we get Celtics-Pacers. That one's going to pick up at 5:30, and then we get the Pelicans and the Kings. That's actually tonight, and then tomorrow, we get the Knicks-Bucks-Suns-Lakers. So over the next two nights, we have these quarterfinals for the in-season tournament, and it's one game. So now I guess the intrigue is maybe a little bit greater. For me, the pool play was kind of bleh, but now that we know we're down to the final 18 single elimination, yeah, I'm curious about tonight.
I am too. I'm still a tournament agnostic. I get it. I'm glad that the players are getting into it. I'm glad that they care about the money. I'm glad that there's like an extra little verve to the game. I don't like the whole point differential thing. That's kind of cheesy, and I know the players don't seem to really like it either, but it is what it is. But, yeah, man, and as a Celtics fan, right now they're favored to win it, so I'm happy about that. It's good basketball. It adds a little something, and anything that adds a little importance to a December game, I'm for it.
Again, talking about the games that we get tonight, Celtics, Pacers, Pelicans, Kings, I actually like all these matchups. Sacramento is a team that we haven't spent a ton of time talking about, but they were, dare I say, underdog story last year. I think that's fair. I think it's fair to call them an underdog story last year. I don't know that anyone really believed in them going into the postseason, and they lost to the Golden State Warriors, but this year, you do it 2 years in a row, and all of a sudden, it's not an underdog story anymore, right? It's expected, and I think we look at Sacramento, we see a team that's 11-7. They have some nice pieces. I think they are better than 11-7. De'Aaron Fox has been fantastic. Sabonis has been fantastic on the glass. I know that this year. I think he's averaging about 12 boards per game. They've got nice pieces, James. They're actually very fun to watch.
Absolutely, and this is what the Golden State problem is, right? Sure, they're not only are they not slipping. There's teams around them coming up, and you know the Timberwolves are another one. But the Sacramento Kings, look, they got a legit borderline superstar in De'Aaron Fox. They have an all-star level guy beside him in Sabonis. Sabonis has his flaws, but you know they have shooters, they have other playmakers. A guy like Malik Monk, they got. So they are, and Mike Brown, their coach, was also an assistant in Golden State. And since he's left, the Golden State defense has slipped, and Sacramento's been on the rise. Is that, you know, no? I don't think that's a coincidence. So really cool to see them pull up that giant comeback against, you know, the quote-unquote Big Brother Warriors. Really good to see Mike Brown, you know, kind of coach circles around his former head coach. And, yeah, man, honestly, after probably, what, two decades of futility in Sacramento, it's good to see a quality team. That fan base deserves it.
It's been a long time. I mean, you would have to go back to the early 2000 rivalry days with Shaq and Kobe and the Lakers. That was the last time that this franchise was relevant in any shape or form. It's been a long time.
Absolutely, man. So, yeah, man, a lot of futility. A lot of bad players come through, a lot of years of just being a sad sack franchise. And, like, it's we can say they're better than the Clippers right now. And the Clippers have pumped all that money and all the hullabaloo that went on there. And Sacramento slowly built themselves up. The Halliburton trade is one of those few trades where you can say both teams won. It has to be made. So, yeah, man, it's almost like house money with Sacramento. Just enjoy the ride, Kings fans.
I'm glad you brought up the Clippers, and we can talk about LA in a moment. I thought that the press conference the other night with Tyronn Lue, I feel bad for the guy. I really do. He's talking about four future Hall of Famers, and you can't really ask them to change, yet something's got to be done. He's having a good time with his team. A lot of coach talk. You could see the frustration. You could see the exhaustion on his face. James, just looking at the Western Conference right now, you look at it, and maybe, you know, Minnesota, I'm going to exclude them from this conversation, even though they've been fantastic this year, best record in the West. But right behind them, you have OKC, who has been great to watch, the Denver Nuggets, defending NBA champs, and you have the Sacramento Kings. Below those three teams, the Phoenix Suns, the Lakers, and the Clippers. When you look at the way OKC, Denver, and Sacramento was built, completely different than the Lakers, Clippers, and just going down the list, right? The Suns, the Lakers, and the Clippers, completely different than the way those squads were built. There comes a time, I think, in every league where you kind of see a flip in the way teams are built. I think that era of just buying talent, grabbing some big free agents, trading all your assets in for one superstar, it was a sexy thing for a while, doesn't seem to be working anymore.
But you know what? There's more than one way to skin a cat. There's more than one way to build a team. A team like OKC, obviously, they traded Paul George, and they got a treasure chest for him, and that treasure chest come to fruition, right? They got Shea for him. They got a bunch of picks, and it worked. But yes, it's definitely showing. We saw the Brooklyn Nets do the same thing, right? KD, Kyrie, added James Harden. House of Cards fell apart. The Clippers, at one point, were actually on that track, right? When they had Lou Will and they had Pat Beverly, and there was a scrappy team built around. And it looked like they were on the way up, and they traded it all, bringing two superstars. And it looked like after three or four seasons, that's falling apart. There is something to the continuity and to the building a strong foundation versus trying to just toss up maybe a get-rich-quick condo, you know? So, but there had to be a mix. The Celtics did the same thing, but then when it came down to it, they made the move for Porzingis. They made the move for Drew Holiday. So you got the homegrown guys, but then you got to add the pieces. So, there's always a risk when you're making the big swing. You might strike out.
You may strike out, and it also goes back to your 20-game comment, which we have talked about since the beginning of the season, right? 20 games to settle in. Teams like OKC, teams like Denver, teams like Minnesota, teams like Sacramento, these guys that have huge continuity, they don't need 20 games. We're not putting those guys in that conversation because they've been okay during the 20-game stretch. It's teams that have just complete and utter roster movement year in and year out. I guess that's who the 20-game mark really connects to.
So I'm going to I think maybe you still need that 20 games because after 20 games, that team that they were playing and beating the heck out of 5 games in because that team wasn't ready, that team is going to be better, you know? So now that game's going to look different when they play in game 30 versus game 5. That's where I think the 20 games still kind of matters, right? But you're right, hitting the ground running, you bank early wins, that matters. So, it's fascinating, man, watching a team like Sacramento. I think they came out a little slow this season, but they hit their gear. The Thunder, they know how they play, they know their identity. While you're right, a team like, obviously, the Clippers are still trying to find who they are. You know, a team like the Rockets still trying to find who they are. They had a nice little start, and now I think they've lost. I don't know. I don't think they've won a road game yet, and, you know, now they're about a 500 team, and it's probably going to dip below that. So you're absolutely right. A team like the Sacramento Kings, we know exactly what they're going to do. They know exactly who they are. Same thing for a team that's been homegrown. But, yeah, it's telling, like you said, that the teams that kind of grow organically, a little more organically, you know, they seem a little more solid this year.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up the Houston Rockets because I did want to get into the idea of a team starts the season 8-1 at home, but they are 0-8 on the road. And I know context matters in that, but you take a look at some of their road wins. Some of the home wins. They beat Sacramento twice. They beat the Lakers. They beat the Nuggets. They beat the Nuggets twice at home. Okay, then you look at the way they have played on the road. This is as strange, I think, as it's ever been for a team. I can't recall where you would see a squad this Dr. Jekyll and Hyde. Like, it's insane to me how you can have such a, I don't know, a shift. This team plays well at home. They are dreadful on the road, James. It's almost comical at this point.
No, who else did that last year? The Warriors. Same thing, man. Winning at home is one thing, but if you can't win on the road, I think that speaks more to the quality of a team, right? Being competitive on the road. So, and you know what? Hey, I'm not dissing the Rockets. They're a young team. They're trying to find themselves. Ime, I think, has done an admirable job of instilling a sense of toughness. They, you know, they actually seem like they care. I was worried. There was a couple times when you watched them before under, Silas Jr., that you could tell the young players weren't learning anything. They were out there just spinning their wheels. But I think now this is a positive step forward, and any step forward is a good thing. So they still have a ways to go. You know, this is the first step. They're building that foundation, though.
I got another 3-game road trip that'll come up in the middle of December where they got to go at Memphis, at Milwaukee, at Cleveland. 3-game road trip. They better get one during that stretch. I think this is a pretty good team. Like, and when I say pretty good, I think this is a squad that can crack the play-in round. I don't think there's any doubt about that. You and I have had conversations away from the radio about the Houston Rockets. They have some nice pieces. I know you're very, very familiar with Ime Udoka. I think he's done a great job. I think it was a home run hire. We know the only reason he's in Houston. It's not because of his lack of X's and O's, his lack of ability to coach. It's because of the weirdness that went on down in Boston. This is an intriguing team. I think it's a squad that people should definitely pay attention to. They're an NBA league pass team, hands down.
I kind of agree. I think they're still a year away from the play-in stuff, but I think as we're seeing, they can't win on the road. I don't think they have enough shooting, and I don't trust Jalen Green. He's a very talented player. I'm worried that those first 2 or 3 years of him just, or I guess even just a year or two of him just doing whatever, not ruined him, but I see a little Zach LaVine to him where he scores in a vacuum, and that's fine, but I don't know how much he contributes to winning. And Fred VanVleet is a nice player, undersized. We know Brooks has his issues. So, you know, I still think they're a year away. I think they're a piece away. I think we need to see, what's the kid's name? The power forward, tall, skinny kid. Work with me.
Sagoon?
No, not Sengun's a nice player too. I think he has a lot of potential. He's actually going to be he's their best player right now.
No question. No question. You're talking about Smith?
Yes.
Jabari Smith, okay.
Jabari Smith, yeah. I think him and Sengun are kind of going to be key. They have to just, you know, develop and be a little bit be better defensively. They're missing a shot blocker and rim protection. But I think everything's set up. This year is all about development. I think they're a year or two away from being like real challengers, kind of like the Thunder a couple years ago, right? Sure, Chris Paul had them really, you know, challenging for a playing spot, but they weren't ready for that. So I definitely think, but they're coming.
He's James Hollis again, always kind enough to join us. James, I know you're out of the mainland enjoying yourself in Hawaii, so I do appreciate you taking out the time to join us today to still get some NBA basketball talk in. My Monday wouldn't be complete without it, so I appreciate the time.
Of course, brother. Always having fun coming on talking to you, man.
Always great to get James on the show. Gives us an opportunity to kind of settle down and step away from college football for a moment. We do have more coming up here on Drive Time Sports. We'll pause and come back to put the final touches on this edition of the show when we return.